thank you so very much, and welcome to another episode of Talking Cloud. My name's Grant Asplund. Man, I am so excited to have you here today because my guest is just, this is going to be such a great conversation, a real seasoned guy. I mean, this is just going to be so awesome. And come on, you guys all know I'm the Gilligan. I bring professors on the program, and so we always have a good conversation, and it's always a lot of fun. So today, it's someone who I have the wonderful benefit of working with. I haven't worked with as much as I'd like, but, you know, I was just looking through his background, and it's like, it's long, but it's short. It's deep, but... You know, the guy doesn't move around a lot. You know, he went to university. He was then in the Navy as a team leader for about half a dozen years. Then started out as a software team lead and then subsequently rose to vice president of technology over the course of 14 plus years at Forescout Technologies. And, you know, I was reading this, and we'll have to talk about this, because led Forescout's R&D as we created the best network access control solution. I definitely want to pull on that because of my time way back in the DHCP days. And then he goes to Avanon, founds this company, and now, boom, he's at Check Point. I mean, that's it. Sorry, there's not a whole lot more there. But lots of years in it. And I'm super excited to have a conversation today with Gil Friedrich. And I don't have the gravel in my voice. He's the vice president of email security at Check Point Software today. That's after the acquisition of Avanon. I think that took place, what, in 2021? Is that right?
Yeah. Hey, Grant.
So, Gil, welcome, man. It's great to have you.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
So... Okay, I just kind of ran through that. Went to university in Israel, in the Navy, and you really haven't, I mean, you've kind of just stayed right in the same boat for a number of years, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, my service in the Navy was in the Israeli Navy. It was my mandatory service of six Sure. years.
But then at Forescout, I mean, boom, sick. I mean, 14 years. That's like, it must have been a good home for you.
Yeah, I joined. So I was in a place in the Navy where they allowed me to go to university before I started my service.
Ah, okay.
So 3 years I went to the university, and then I served 6 years, during which I finished most of my master's. And then I had to do my my research at the end for the thesis. So I spent 6 months doing that. But then, you know, the military doesn't pay much. So after 6 months of not getting any salary, I went to my professor and I said, you know, I finished all the research. I just need to write my thesis. Do you mind if I take a job? And he said, it's funny you say that. I'm about to start a company. And he explained to me what they were looking to do. I knew so little, I couldn't even judge if it's a good or a bad idea. I just thought, I'm going to see you every day, and that will make sure I write my thesis and I submit everything. So I joined him, and that's how I became one of the first employees for Forescout.
Wow.
3.5 years later, I was running the R&D there. And then I also relocated with the company to the U.S. So I was there 14 years, but I did multiple things during those 14 years. And then I think it gave me all the background I needed to, you know, to start a company, to start Avanon, because I knew R&D well. I knew the mm-hmm. business side of things. So mm-hmm. when I started Avanon, I had enough of both worlds to, you know, to be able to start a company.
Where'd the idea, inspiration come for Avanon? How'd that come about? And maybe you can explain for those that don't know what makes it so unique.
Sure. So I would say this. We myself and the other three founders, we all worked at Forescout. I was here on the US side at the time, and speaking to customers, there was a repeating theme where, you know, we would explain what we were doing, and they would say, we love the technology, but, you know, we're moving to the cloud. And the question always came, how do we take this technology and implement that in the cloud? Mm. Now, Forescout, like every other company, the thought process is, we have this technology, how do we take the technology we have in order to secure the data and payloads in the cloud?
Right.
And we felt like, you know, let's think about it in reverse for a second. We have this problem in the cloud. What's the best way to solve it? You know, right. We have no technology. We're starting from scratch. And we felt like there was a better way to do it with a cloud-first approach. And also, so we started to ask questions. And, you know, the first question we asked potential customers was, what's your most important, biggest you know, cloud deployment, almost, you know, across the board, the winning was Office 365. Mm-hmm. And then the question was, okay, what's your biggest problem with Office 365? Phishing. Mm. Excellent. You know, that's our problem. That's where we focused our effort. Yep. And we weren't wrong. We were luckily correct that there was a better way to secure 365 than the way the, you know, the legacy email gateways did it. Right, so today, right. Everyone is, you know, going towards the API-based solution, but we were really the first ones to, you know, lucky enough to be the first in that market and really define it and enjoy the growth.
That's critical too, isn't it, Gil? I mean, one of the things, I've been around the biz long enough and seen many startups, many that are just brilliant, but one of the most critical things is timing, right? Timing,
yes, absolutely. Is just,
and you can have the greatest idea on the planet, but if the timing's not right, you know, I mean, I work for a company, Headbone Interactive. Okay, this is way back when the internet was literally in its infancy, and you were dialing up, but they were doing animation cartoons over the internet, so. You know, I always say it was like drinking a milkshake with a coffee straw. You know, if you, God forbid, you hit a banana, you know, because, and that's what it was like. If there was any kind of higher fidelity or more motion or anything, right? So it was a real challenge, but it was a great idea.
And now, I would say with the timing, you know, it's, you need to start a little before. So you need to be mature when the big wave hits. Right. I think that's how it worked for us, luckily.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah. But you can't be too early, right?
Absolutely not. You're too early, you won't grow. You're too late, someone else cut the wave.
Too late is kind of, that's an obvious, right? Yeah. It's really the timing on hitting the stride correctly, which you guys clearly did in so many, so many ways.
I mean, we started 2019. So think about it. We started the company 2015. You know, in the beginning, I remember discussions with the vendors of the legacy email gateways, and we explained, you know, we installed inside 365. You don't change your MX record, etc. And they would go, "What's wrong with changing the MX record?" Right now, every one of them tried to buy a startup to catch up, but at the time, no one understood what we were doing. Even customers, there was a lot of customer education. So,
right.
Customer didn't, you know, get it. But somewhere in 2019,
how are you going to protect it? What do you mean? How are you going to? Well, how's it going to work?
And how are you able to scan in line when you're in API? All those questions always came up.
Yeah.
2019, we started the year with 200 customers. So four years into the company, we only had 200 customers, but we finished with 1,000. Mm. And the following year, we had 3,000. Mm-hmm. And by roughly mid-year, you know, third quarter of the next year, we already had 6,000 customers. And this is where Checkpoint acquired us.
Yeah.
We finished 23 with 23,000 customers. So
Wow.
You can see the kind of growth we enjoyed.
That's amazing. But I think it's also clearly a testament to the right product meeting serious needs. Right. I always say in the marketplace, you know, as a founder of any company, you want, you know, there's really three things you can make, right? Vitamin, aspirin, or crack. Vitamin, forget it. Because it's not a big deal. Aspirin, okay, good. You're solving a use case, but you really want crack, right? Something that, God, once I use it, it's like this thing. And you know, you guys are close to crack, at least to the security community within organizations, right? That say, hey man, this stuff is like so much better. I think that's why you're seeing the kind of growth. What do you think?
Yep. So first,
and sorry for the analogy, cracks maybe.
Yeah,
sorry,
no, everything we do is
family. Yeah, it's a family program here. So,
I think we are just coming back from Checkpoint's annual event, the CPX event, and yeah. Maybe it's because the people that approach me like the product, but the people that approach me often the feedback is, you know, this is the best product I've sold in my life. I worked for this company and that company, and, you know, I've been selling security product for 25 years. This is the best product I've ever sold. I think when they say that, what they mean is a few things. It's just works out of the box. So, you know, you install it in a second.
Yeah.
No configuration required. The value demonstration is also very quick. So I would say with email, unlike a lot of other solutions, you know, it's not in theory. As soon as you install, you start seeing attacks and right. You start seeing how the product blocks attacks.
Right.
So in that respect, you know, installing quickly and seeing value quickly, the time to value is probably pretty rare in
the security minutes. Business. It's minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and I think that it's also evidence of, I mean, I find it interesting that we're talking about a technology that, you know, we've been using for 30 years, and yet it still represents the tip of the spear for the most part with regards to threats, right? What is it? 91% or more of all compromises start with an email, right? Or I think that was the data that I last saw. I know it's very high. I find that interesting. And it seems like now with the likelihood of my uncle's prince cousin misspelling is gone away with the help of AI. I mean, there's some interesting dynamics. How do you see that playing in the email security space? Is it just going to be there's more of it and we're going to catch it? How do you see that play out? And I'm talking about, you know, the whole AI and its ability to really represent a human much more effectively.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. So you're right. First, you know, I think the statistics is that about 90% of attacks start with email.
Mm-hmm.
And many people are surprised because it's been around for so long. Can't it be solved already?
Right.
I think email has something that's very unique to it. And this is that on purpose, we make it open to everyone, right? You and I, we can meet in a conference, exchange business card or emails, and we immediately correspond. So it's very open. And yeah. If you think about it, anyone in your organization can get an email from anyone in the world.
Sure.
So to identify an attack, it's pretty hard. There's no... only internal. Everyone is inside your organization, basically communicating with your employees. I think, and we spoke about timing a little bit, but the other thing was, because it's so language-based, I mean, you have malicious links and you have malicious files, but very often the trick is just to trick the human brain. You know, you get a fake CEO email, hey, I'm getting on an airplane. Before I land, please send me 500 Apple gift cards to the secretary of the CEO.
Right.
So it's tricking someone to do something. It's a scam, the classic scam of you know, con artists, etc.
Yeah.
And it's all about language. So the fact we were able to start all this while natural language processing and machines actually understanding what's the content of the request, all that technology, hit maturity, was also very fortunate for us. Today we obviously secure millions of mailboxes, but at the time we weren't. So if we wanted to compete with the leaders, we couldn't rely on us seeing an attack in one organization, then implementing some sort of a block list in another organization, because we saw nothing. We had zero customers. So to start in an AI first approach also had us rely on, you know, this is an email. What are they asking in this email? Oh, they're asking to, there's financial aspect to it. They're asking right. to send money. And then we also noticed, I'll just take the example I gave, but think about this example. What did the fake CEO say? I will not be available in the next 3 hours, so don't try to reach me, because if they would try to reach him by phone or whatever, they'll find out it's a scam. It's don't try true, to reach me.
Right.
There's urgency, right?
Yeah. It's triggers that you see these similarities, right, that are saying, hey, something's not right about this.
Yeah, but now you have a machine that can say, in this email, it's financial related, there's urgency, there's lack of availability. So we have all these indicators to help then feed another AI algorithm and say, with all of these included, this is very likely to be phishing. And then the other aspect, which when I used to describe it a year ago, people would think it's science fiction, but now everyone's playing with ChatGPT. It's obvious. It's what we call stylometry. The CEO doesn't write emails like this. That's not how he signs. Not how he, he doesn't say voice. Hi. He says dear, exactly. His right. language is. So a machine can now learn the style of the CEO and see that this is not the CEO style to flag that. So you have, urgency with a financial email, with lack of availability, with all these indicators, bang, the machine can make a decision that, that this is malicious. But all of these just serve to say, relying on language, that technology matured to a point where, we could really develop an anti-phishing algorithm to catch the attacks that everyone else was missing. Mm.
I wonder, as I hear you describe that, I just think, what's going to happen when the nefarious have AI that understands and analyzes everything you've ever written publicly or something, right? I mean, I wonder if you'll start to see this accumulation of that information to subsequently create even richer fake attacks. I don't know.
I'll tell you where we see this. So first, the entire sort of attack vector is coined BC, right? Business email compromise.
Absolutely.
And we broke those into three generations where generation one, they try to, that's a CEO example where they fake a CEO and they try to send an email from another email address as if they're the CEO. In generation two, they used a real account. So you and I have exchanged some emails before this, before meeting here. Now, what if your account is compromised? And what if you sent me a reply, hey, just before you start, here are the instructions on how to connect. Please read it before you join. So now I got it from you. And so that's now generation two of attacks where it's really about the language. You use this language, is Grant using this language in order to send emails, etc. Because the sender is completely legitimate. They just broke into your account and they're using that in order to attack the next one. So that was generation two. And in generation three, they don't even need to break into an account. They're using legitimate services that send invites to events, and they're leveraging that in order to carry out an attack. So we're now using Riverside as the platform. It could be Zoom, it could be Ring Central, whatever it is. You have a chance to put a note, right, when you send an invite. So all of a sudden you get an invite from Zoom, and the top of the invite says, before joining the meeting, please read, please go over this document. Very right. legitimate. That document is malicious. It's a link to an Excel with a macro, whatever the attack is. So all of a sudden, you get a regular Zoom invite, looks completely regular, but something in it is actually malicious. And this is really generation three. In the world of invoices, what we're seeing is someone would register with QuickBooks that everyone uses, a fake Google.com. So all of a sudden, they're starting to issue invoices to people that are using G Suite from Google, and they are coming from QuickBooks. So the sender, fully legitimate, everything is fine about everything other than the fact that you're going to send it to the wrong organization. Sometimes they know the exact dollar amount to the cent. So what they would do, what we've seen them do is, let's say you're a customer, you're using Google. Again, just using broad examples, right? Mm-hmm. So company one is using Google. The hackers would first call Google to say, hey, this is company one. We didn't get your invoice this month. Can you resend it? Yeah, no problem. I just resend it to you. Excellent. By the way, I'm just now processing it. Before it arrives, can you tell me what the amount was? Oh, it's $172.08. Thank you very much. Close. Now they issue a fake invoice with the exact amount to the cent. So the organization now looks at two identical invoices, yep, and they need to figure out which one they pay. Think about our challenge to figure out which one of those is the fake invoice.
Right. Wow. And,
you know, we gained a lot of knowledge in order to be able to do this very accurately. I don't want to share all the methods, obviously. Unfortunately, sure. I don't want to give a leg, forward to the hackers. But I explained it to one of our customers, and he said to me, now I understand. You know, this is a 50,000 employee that gets invoices from QuickBooks. And he said, I was looking at the ones you blocked, and I was looking at the legitimate ones. Me as a human, they all look the same. And I had no idea how you so accurately were able to block the fake ones and allow the legitimate ones. Only now that you explain to me how you do this, I'm starting to understand how you're able to differentiate. But really, this is what we call BC3, and this is probably the most advanced we're seeing right now.
Remarkable. That, you know, it's extraordinary too, the weaving together of the electronic as well as the social engineering, right? Hey, how much is, you know, the social effort that enables them to just pinpoint the data, right? That's remarkable. You know what? The other one I want to talk about real quick, because I've seen you talk about this and I find it fascinating. That's the threat from the zero click, the no click threat. I've had people say, oh, there's no way. Talk a little bit about what's out there.
Sure. So really what they're leveraging is the fact that as soon as the email arrives, there is some code running on the client side to basically render the email, right? So you look at the inbox, there's a line that's presented there and it has the subject. And sometimes it has a little preview depending on your mode, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's code running, there's an opportunity to leverage that code in order to compromise the endpoint. But the outcome is what we call, you know, zero click, because, you know, in a lot of the attacks, the end user that does need to do something. Mm-hmm. And so at least in your, I don't know, when you frame your security, you're saying, yeah, I'll put all the layers, but my users are not idiots. So if one attack comes through, they'll figure out it's an attack, or we'll have a process, a policy in the organization to block it, and so on and so forth. With zero click, all that goes away because the user aspect of it doesn't exist. All it needs to do is reach the inbox, right, and the account gets compromised. We've seen specific attacks against, iOS, iPhones, where some piece of code is running there.
Now, is Outlook, this code, some piece of code, is that something that's already been planted? Or are you talking about on my email client that gives me a preview mode when I select the file? I mean,
it's the client, but I'll give you like one of the examples I remember was apparently there's in Outlook a way for the incoming email to affect the sound that will be played when the email arrives. You know, apparently that API exists. I don't know that anyone ever leveraged it. Maybe very few did. Hackers leveraged it. They use that fact that they're taking a, you know, a piece of whatever link to the outside to play a sound, to be able to, again, cause some, you know, some code to be executed on the client that shouldn't, using that, you know,
yeah, that's sound extraordinary. Yeah, it's extraordinary. And I think, you know, certainly we're not going to see less. We're going to see more, because more and more people are moving this stuff up into the cloud, Office 365 and G Suite and all the other stuff, right?
Yeah. Also, I think you can see that hackers are really making an effort to put their hands on the source code. You know, there was a big announcement from Microsoft that they've been hacked. Their internal email has been hacked. And I think they also said that some of their there was access to some of their source code.
That's the prize when they can get that. And get that. I mean, that's if there's a prize, especially the real prize is getting it without it being known.
Right. Have the code leaked and no one knows that it was.
That's the panacea, man.
And I think, you know, again, we have no idea what exactly is in the hackers' heads right now, but we know that other vendors, whether they're, you know, no one's as big as Microsoft, but very large organizations, very large services, cloud SaaS services, etc., had their code stolen. Yeah. Some security companies had been hacked and their source code was stolen. And I think all of that, when it falls to the hands of the hackers, whether they do it manually or with automated tools or with AI, really what they're doing is they're trying to figure out vulnerabilities, backdoors, etc., to carry out, you know, very sophisticated attacks. And this is really the supply chain problem, right? That you know, now everyone that is using vendor one is generally vulnerable because the hackers had the source code and figured out how they can, you know, bypass their security or hack them or whatever.
Well, and I think it's also evidence of, you know, my stupid analogies, but I think of, you know, in the very early days when I was first working at Check Point, you know, it was like two pieces of spaghetti on your plate, you know, firewall and VPN. And that was it. I mean, there wasn't a lot more. So it was easy to find the ends. It was easy to untie any knots. I mean, it wasn't a problem. But now it's like literally a full plate of spaghetti, because you're so interconnected. So there's so many different aspects from the infrastructure side, the connectivity, you know, all of those things have grown so much. It's not so easy anymore. It's
impossible.
Very complex. And you know, I think, you know, when we talk about digital transformation, I kind of see that as a hamster wheel that, you know, once you start on that process, you're really, you know, going to just continue to refine and improve and go to the next stage and the next stage and the next stage. And it's going to continue to be an issue, all of us being connected. And are we really doing an effective job controlling it all, you know, especially when think of how, I mean, you guys have done a masterful job with AI, but I mean, it's kind of, I mean, I think about where we're going and the way AI is infiltrating everything. It's kind of extraordinary.
Yeah. So to your first point, I think we have much less control, because we don't control the infrastructure anymore. We're running in AWS, so we have to rely on them. It doesn't mean we're less secure. Maybe we're more secure. You know, maybe they're doing a better job than if it was in our data center, but we don't have the full control. And then from the other side, you know, no one starts to write code from scratch anymore. You use a million open source packages that you have to trust, because you can't, you know, go over the entire code. And I think this is one of the areas where AI will really help us. There's no way a human can otherwise, you know, look at every piece of code that they're incorporating into their solution. But with AI, we might be able to try and hug this and figure out
the variations, right? I mean, that's one of the things that I ponder, and this can be applied in so many different aspects of our business, right? So many things that you can say, wow, all of a sudden, you know, the number of samples that I can analyze, the number of variations I can analyze, the granularity to which I can analyze, unprecedented.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, email security is my example, and imagine scanning a billion emails a week or a day, you know, that's the magnitude.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it's extraordinary too, right? Speaking as, you know, I have to talk about this if you don't mind. So, you know, you're talking about leading the best network access control, NAC, right? This was an acronym that Cisco, I'm pretty sure, was the one that invented. Well, I want to go back before NAC. When I owned Meta Info and I'd bought it back from Checkpoint, you know, we were the first in the world to port bind to Windows. So we had a Windows DNS. We were using ISC DHCP, but we'd modified it somewhat. And we had IP address management, which is really just nothing more than user interface over the top of that beast called bind and DHCP, right? But we came up with secure addressing foundation extensions. How do you like that for an acronym? SAFE DHCP. Nice. And okay, all it was, Gil, was, you know, the discover gets broadcast. Oh, yeah, who are you? And, you know, there's that 9 exchanges that go back and forth. Well, when the MAC address was offered up, we just put a wedge in that said, okay, hold up. And we'd look in a simple, you know, database that we had, Sleepy Cat or whatever database, and we'd check for the MAC address, right? Mm-hmm. And we had built in this mechanism to essentially populate, right? So you'd want to do that on a Monday morning or something, right? And it was never perfect because there might be a guest that was in with their machine or something, but theoretically you could kind of have it fairly clean, and then you could flip it on. And essentially what it did was when you came onto the network, if you weren't in the database, you'd get a full mask and a network of one. And so you'd fire up your browser, and we actually had a partnership with Cygate where they would do a kind of a memory check and you know, just do a health check on the state of your machine. And as long as you passed, you'd get to the page where we'd NAC you and issue you a fully routable IP address. And it was what we used to call poor man's network access control, right? Because most mm-hmm. people didn't know how to go out and self-assign an IP address, right?
Right.
And in fact, it was funny conversation. Steve DeYoung, I love you, brother. He was the guy who led development, right? And I remember I told him, man, we should do this. Do what? I mean, do this DHCP thing. And he's going, excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, that's fucking stupid. And I said, why? He goes, all you got to do is go out to the C prompt. And I said, hey, listen, man, you know how to do that. But the growth of the internet, people aren't going to know how to do that. They're going to just know they plug in their network cable, their hard drive's going to flicker, and then they can get out to Facebook or eBay or, you know, whatever. And I'll tell you, man, that we ended up coming out with a DHCP server that was a VM. We sold it for $99.95, and that thing flew off the shelf. And I loved it because I never had any RMAs. You know, it's just reinstall it, right? It was the best. And then Cisco announced NAC. And mm-hmm. I'm not kidding. Gil, you'll appreciate this, right? When you're growing your small business, you're just whipping that pony, man. You're taking it right to the edge. No matter how much money, okay, let's hire another rep, right? And my business went to a third of what I was doing, and I was self-funded. I mean, that boat was heavily listing, man. I was almost history, but managed to pull it out. But I used to go out and do it. David Letterman top 10. You all know NAC means network access control, not available currently. Nice attempt, Cisco. I had a bunch of them that I used to. It was kind of fun, but those were fun times. That was before network access control really became defined like you guys did. So there's a little bit of a fun story.
You served the use case. I think we saw some competition at the time from the HCP-based solutions, but we always spoke against them because we explained that exactly like your guy.
Totally.
Right? So,
And it was spot on. My answer would be, look, all this does is protects you against the unintended. Mm-hmm. Okay, and this was an era, you'll remember, when I had laptops that had viruses that if I was coming in to see you and I plugged it in a Wi-Fi, I plugged into your network, I would subsequently infect your network, right?
Right.
And this was common, and that was the use case for NAC in the first place, other than, hey, it's my network, not yours, TCP/IP, free love, forget it. We started to say, who cares? Because I remember I asked I asked Steve, I said, tell me something. Why is it when I go into a network and I plug in, I get a fully routable IP address? And he says, well, that's how it's done. I said, well, what do you mean? He says, well, that's what the RFC states. What do you mean? A DHCP server must respond to a discover. Okay, Puritan, but it's like, you know, I'm paying for this, right? But this was the mentality of the original, let's call them internet founders, right? TCP/IP purists that said, this is how it's done. And if you think about the logic behind that, how kooky is that? That just because you get a discover from a host somewhere on your network, you have to respond, right? And that was really something that I kind of said, no, let's do this safety HCP, because you don't have to respond. It's my network, right? But I think it's very interesting, the powers of that early movement, because the internet was Woodstock, man.
Right.
You know, clothing optional, free love. Come on, baby, you can do anything you want. We just didn't realize we are laying the foundation for literally the backbone of every business on the planet, right?
Yeah. The assumption was that if you're able to get into the building with a laptop and a wire, you already passed all the clearances.
Yeah, so you're safe. You're good to go.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Hey,
yeah,
listen.
I think really what eventually happened was, at the time, I think the computers couldn't protect themselves. So you had the firewall that was very important because it was blocking all the bad stuff from coming in.
Yep.
And the machines themselves were these vulnerable, ready to be exploited.
Totally.
And if someone came behind the firewall with something that was already infected, etc., you know, they could infect the entire network. This is the 2000s.
Yeah.
But all this notion of zero trust and, you know, I can connect to the nastiest network on the planet. I can connect to any Starbucks in the world, and I'll still be safe. Eventually, that's what happened. So the need for NAC was maybe not as strong as it initially was. Mm-hmm. Now, again, you can, in theory, resources aside, connect to any Wi-Fi. It doesn't mean that you have access to any proprietary data or services or someone else's machine.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's, I think, how it evolved eventually.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. And, you know, I think the whole, you know, the acquisition of Perimeter 81, you know, and their technology, I think, is fascinating and really kind of the future that really seems to expand that corporate environment to incorporate so many more transports, right? I mean, it's fascinating.
Yeah. I agree. You know, promoting the option to connect from anywhere and get the feeling that you're connected to a corporate network.
Fascinating. Yeah, it's exciting. And, you know, the performance, you know, I mean, it's just one of the things, if there's anything I wish we would have maybe given more consideration to, and of course, hindsight's always 2010, right? But it seems things would be quite different had we only realized with some forethought the bandwidth, the connectivity, the compute, the storage, the things that we just, you know, Moore's law says is going to continue. If we would have extrapolated out what that meant, so that the cadence may have started a little differently, focused on the data less as opposed to the castle kind of architectures. I mean, obviously, there are many factors. A firewall couldn't do, as you already said, right? A firewall couldn't do a whole lot more than a firewall and be able to allow the users to have an experience that they could put up with, right? So it just seems like we should have thought about that data being the real prize, the real gold.
I think from our perspective, maybe phishing was a bit new because it wasn't, it was almost like opening a new business model for hackers, a new line of monetization that wasn't mm-hmm. available before. You know, there was always malware to steal the data, to try to get into your data center, into your crown jewel. So, you know, blackmail the organization. We saw that stealing credit cards. We've seen that with in the past as well. But something about phishing and recent phishing about, you know, fake invoices or gift cards or ransomware of new sorts, etc., felt like hackers just really elaborated their business model. They found new ways to make money out of being hackers.
Yeah. Out of just writing emails, really.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. Just crafting different, and maybe not all emails, but different correspondence, because we've moved so much to that digital world for correspondence far beyond just an email. Right. Invoices, yeah. As you've said. I mean, I can't tell you how many invoices I've received for my Norton that I don't own. You know, they're, yeah, of course, all in my spam folder. But it's just it's funny. I get them all the time. You know, that your invoice is attached, you know, and it's, I've never paid once and I haven't had anybody call me on them. So I think I'm OK.
Yeah, maybe that's the way against the hackers. Wait a little bit. See what happens.
Hey, Gil, this has been awesome, man. I really appreciate all your time. I really enjoyed talking with you. And I had no idea that you are like magna cum laude, both computer science, face recognition, and infrared images. Man, you're a super smart guy.
I don't know what the right response is. It's I enjoyed some of the game.
Say yes, I am. No, I'm impressed, man. I mean, I'm impressed. I always like I always enjoy talking to people that are a lot smarter than me, which isn't difficult to find. Very cool. Very cool. Well, thank you again, Gil. I really had a great time. Next time I'll have you on for 2 hours.
Sounds good, Grant. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, I appreciate learning so much about the email stuff, really. I think that's great. I think our audience will enjoy it too. So thanks a whole bunch, man.
Thank you, Grant. Enjoy the weekend.
You too. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was a nice, rich 45-minute discussion with a brilliant founder of Avanon, now vice president of email security at Check Point. He's a colleague. He's a friend. Gil Friedrich. I don't say it with the gravel in my voice like he can, but great guest, great time. So, hey, listen, tell all your friends, subscribe, share, like, and we'll look forward to having you back on the next episode of Talking Cloud. Thanks so much.